Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is a podcast from the Smart Material Collective, made by nerds, funded by the listeners.
Hello and welcome to Aren't You a Doctor Yet Now? This week, Sahel, he's gone out and he's done what he does best. He's interviewed someone with an incredibly fascinating story about their life.
So I'm here with George. He's wearing a flat back cap. How do you describe that?
Just like that, you know. Yeah. Back to front cap.
He's got glasses on. He's got a nice check shirt. You look like a cool dude.
Yeah.
Not your average scientist.
You're probably more familiar with me. We're wearing a red tabard, you know, which I don't wear now either.
George, tell me about how we first met.
We first met because after years of working in the NHS and clinical psychology and mostly in psychiatric settings, I found myself after the financial crash being financially wiped out and penniless and walking the streets in London, and ended up selling the Big Issue. And I sold the Big Issue outside the BBC, and that's where I met Suhail.
Where are we now, by the way?
We're in the BBC. I'm no longer outside, I'm inside.
Are you inside, what?
I'm inside, in this weather, you know, it's quite cold outside, you know, it's a lot better in here than out there.
I mean, so, let's, touching on that, that's a tough job, isn't it? Like, being a Big Issue seller, like, it's one, I imagine it's extremely... You got to have thick skin to do it, is what I'm saying, because it's cold and people are cold as well.
Yeah, there's the weather aspect, you know, it's variable. In the winter, it can be quite demanding. It can be physically quite demanding. It takes a lot of energy out of you. But emotionally, it's probably more difficult for many people because you're continually in the verge of trying to interact with people and give your best shot, you know, to try and get a kind of positive engagement. And 99% of people just ignore you, you know, and so you need to have that little bit of resilience, you know, that you can deal with that rejection. And not everybody's able to do that. I wrote a little paper recently. I've slipped into writing academic articles, and they're all peer-reviewed, and I'd written some many years ago as an undergrad, and I wrote one recently in something called borderline personality. The major trigger is social rejection. So, you know, for selling the Big Issue, you're continually having to deal with social rejection. So if you have a kind of borderline hypersensitivity to social rejection, the Big Issue is not for you.
It's like constantly, if you're constantly getting, like, asking people out and getting rejected, like, on dates, that's a painful thing for people to go through, isn't it?
It's a painful thing. And the thing is, for the idea of calling it borderline personality, a lot of people habituate to that, you know, and everybody has kind of, you know, nightclub experiences or getting rejections and things like that. Then it enamours you a little bit and you get strengthened in the basis of it. But for people with borderline, they've got kind of a biological dysregulation of their emotional system and a sensitivity to social rejection. So they don't really kind of habituate to, you know, you don't go through it 100 times and now, oh, I can deal with it now, you know. It's very difficult for people to manage. And the consequences are often when they feel that with any intensity, they start self-harming, you know, and maybe cutting themselves and putting cigarettes out in their arms, you know, that kind of thing, or overdosing, a lot of suicide attempts. So
is that something that you've seen firsthand then, or have experienced yourself?
It is something, you know, you have to count your blessings, you know, and unfortunately it's not a personal issue for myself. When I worked in psychiatric settings, I'd say every single woman that I saw in the addiction service would at one time have been classified as borderline personality. If you've got difficulty in dealing with emotions and having, you know, your emotions quite dramatically going very high, you might one day think somebody's up on a pedestal and you see them in the street the next day and they're preoccupied and they walk by you, and then you take it personally and maybe start, you know, you can start self-harming or, you know, a suicide attempt. It really can be rather minor little social rejections that can trigger quite dramatic consequences. People with borderline, you know, often use drugs or they use alcohol to try and control the feelings. If you're feeling suicidal and you're going to hurt yourself and you start taking a bit of heroin or you start taking a lot of benzodiazepines, then you can find you can change your mood. And so the majority of people, majority of the women, a lot of men as well, within the addiction service, a lot of people that we see, people would maybe disregard as junkies or, you know, that may well be some of the underlying problems that they have. They may actually have a condition, you know, that is to do with it's almost like their self-medication. Through taking illicit drugs or through taking excessive amounts of alcohol as a way of treating themselves, you know.
And an interesting way, even though it was largely unintentional, your experience has given you a unique insight which perhaps other academics might not have into these kind of social issues, you might say.
In selling a big issue, I was asked to coordinate things locally, you know, as well as selling outside the BBC, I was asked to be a kind of what they call a local distribution point. So it's almost like a mini shop in the street, and everybody that sold a big issue around about the Oxford Circus area in London would come to me, and, you know, and I would deal with the money and bank the money for the big issue. And because of that, you see a whole array of different people, you know, and with all sorts of different problems, you know, and backgrounds, psychiatric backgrounds and drug-related backgrounds and other things that are associated with that. A sizable percentage of people for whom the classification of borderline would almost undoubtedly have been given at some point in the past. It's one of the consequences of poor understanding of the biological underpinnings of psychiatric conditions and getting proper treatment that actually deals with the biology that underpins it.
From your insight, why is there a lack of diagnosis of this issue, and what can we do to better help people in the situation that you found yourself once in?
Myself personally, you know, I walked the streets, not for that long, you know. I actually went into the police station and asked for the advice, you know. So it's not something that I was wanting to adopt as a lifestyle. I was wanting to move on quickly. And I did that. I managed to find a cheap hostel and kind of moved on. In many ways, you know, my experience of working in psychiatric settings and dealing with people in difficult circumstances and how you cope with things, and rather than becoming self-loathing and ended up treating yourself badly and making a lot of bad decisions that's going to put you in a worse situation. It's almost like you feel that rejection for others and you start punishing yourself, you know. And I was aware of that and managed not to do that. But not everyone is able to do that. And often the decisions they make, you know, just can seem quite self-punitive. It's almost like they internalise the rejection from others or the wider societal rejection. But the big issue in psychiatric classification is that the everything is used as, every diagnosis is based on signs and symptoms. It's not based in any biology. And I think what I've kind of moved in terms of recent work in the last couple of years and writing academic papers is trying to look at the biological underpinnings. You know, if somebody's depressed or if somebody's got borderline, or, you know, what is the actual change in the biology and how do you shape up appropriate medications that would help to correct any biology that's wrong, you know? And like any other medical condition, you expect to take medication that is actually targeting and treating your condition. For people with borderline, and often for many people with depression, up to about 40% of people with depression are what they call treatment resistant. You know, the medications available, the Prozac and the SSRIs and different types of antidepressants don't help them. And there's a lack of understanding, there's a lack of investigation as to what the biological processes are that underpin that.
Why do you think there's a lack of incentive to figure this problem out?
There's a lot of vested interests, you know, a lot of things in the academic world, you know, classically the phrase they used to use was dead men's shoes, and the idea that a way of seeing things, a way of seeing the world, only changed when the professor or the head of department, you know, moved on. Yeah? And for many people in psychiatry in particular, you know, there's still a legacy of kind of Freudian psychoanalysis and seeing things in very much a psychological frame of reference. You know, so it's very, very challenging for somebody who's trained in that, who sees themselves as an expert in the basis of this knowledge base, to have to almost like be a student again and take on a wider knowledge base about alterations in gut bacteria and alterations in the immune system. Many people that are unsuccessfully treated with depression, at very high risk of suicide, have been found in the last 18 months to have substantial help from probiotic. You know, it seems tangential. But that's the problem, you know, is that most psychiatrists couldn't tell you anything about gut bacteria or how you would assess it or what, you know. So there's a lack of a knowledge base, you know, and the structures that historically have been set in place that this is the way you conceptualise it. And it's challenging for many people who are in powerful positions, who have made up, who are professors of psychiatry or head of British Psychiatry Services or whatever it would be. They have a knowledge base. It's quite threatening for them to actually have to update their skills. Yeah.
No, I understand. Actually, that's a very interesting point. And I think it goes back to, maybe not dogma, that's a strong word, but it's ingrained behaviour and what's comfortable for people. But it's moving out that comfort zone into multidisciplinary approach, which is what you're saying is effective.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Speaking about becoming a student again, you know, you've had this amazing journey where you've, you know, come down to London, you've went through difficult times, but you persevered and you've done really well, and your backrank academic articles. Just explain to me how that journey feels looking back at it.
I saw a lot of patients over the years who would have been classified with paranoia, you know, and I think being wondering about a strange city, I started feeling a little bit paranoid. Where was the safe place? You know, why is that person looking at me? You know? So that was the kind of baseline experience in London, walking about at night, trying to look as though you're going somewhere, sitting at bus stops, you know. I started selling the big issue during the day to try and get some money. So it's been a bit of a sea change because I've now moved on. I'm I've been a guest editor in biomedical journals, you know, I do peer reviews, professors in neurology, you know, I have to assess their papers for different journals and decide whether they're going to get published or not. And so within a few years, you know, it's been a kind of a real sea change, you know, in terms of from a day-to-day survival and how do I get by here, and I hope it doesn't rain because nobody will stop and buy a big issue, and, you know, how am I going to pay for the rent for the hostel for the night? And going from that kind of base to being involved in something totally different. But for me, it was... I try to integrate those experiences, biomedical research that I'm involved in currently and writing and thinking about these things. In many ways, the things that have been hills for me to climb, that have been tragedies in my life, have allowed me to be in a position where I'm able to have a slightly different perspective and wider perspective sometimes. Life has pushed you towards the end of the pitch, and so you have a slightly different perspective in things that can be quite challenging and can be quite fruitful. That if you haven't a different perspective in things, however you've came to that different perspective, that is something that has to be treasured and valued, because it's the essence of creativity and helping things to move and hopefully helping things progress. And I see that in Big Issue Land. I see a lot of examples, and I think of some of the people when I'm writing some of the papers that I'm writing.
That's a nice thought, actually, that you would care about these people to that extent, and, you know, that you're putting your intellect to good use in a way. And, you know, it's funny because I remember buying a Big Issue for you outside. I used to buy a monthly. I used to bring a tenner. I was like, yeah, let me get the month. Because I saw something in you when I met you, and I was like, this is, you're an interesting character. And to see that journey from, you know, from you being a Big Issue seller to going on to publishing these academic articles, and also, as you say, being a guest editor, and you're doing some work with Wellcome Trust as well, has been really inspiring. I mean, what would you say to someone who's kind of going through a difficult time, who's struggling with their career or personal life? What kind of message you have for them, or words of wisdom?
I don't want to be sound too cliched, you know, but I think you do have to try and get a little bit of you that's looking in positive things and trying to get something, and maybe past expectations and things you were hoping, you have to kind of put them aside and then embrace other goals and other targets that are maybe more realistic in your situation at a given time. And I think, I mean, that's easier said than done, you know, and speaking to someone, you know, don't underestimate the benefits of speaking to somebody that's, particularly somebody who's been through a similar type of process, and getting a different perspective on it, you know, a feeling that whatever the circumstances are that have put you in a difficult situation, that there is a way out. You're going to get up in the morning at some point, and you're going to be looking forward to the day. There's not always going to be a day full of misery and dread or anxiety or paranoia or emotional dysregulation or suicidal thoughts or whatever it would be. There is hope, and there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and there's the ability of moving on. And I think if you have it, even if it's just a little bit of you, to remind yourself that that is a possibility, it does keep you going and does keep you motivated and keeps you thinking and hoping. And I think that's important. I think subjectively that's important, you know.
That's very wise words, and I appreciate them, George. You're an excellent man and an absolute fucking legend, if I do say so myself. What are your hopes for the future? What are you doing now? And tell me about your work with the Wellcome Trust and the Wellcome Collection.
Well, when I was with the Big Issue, I managed to get a day's placement once a week in the Wellcome Trust for over a year. For people not familiar, the Wellcome Trust is a charity that funds biomedical research. It's one of the largest in the world. It's based in London, very well known, very well respected, and throughout the kind of biomedical world. It was a good opportunity for me with the kind of background that I had. And I remember I got this through the Big Issue, you know. I didn't walk up to the door and shut the door and get invited in. You know, it was through the Big Issue. So I need to be grateful for the Big Issue for, you know, looking to open doors that were appropriate for me, as they do for other people. I'm hoping to continue writing the biomedical articles. I'm hoping to get some funding through the Wellcome Trust in order to do that. maybe even, you know, put out some podcasts or something like that, you know, in different conditions, different disorders, having a little bit of kind of everyday knowledge in these conditions and maybe saying a little bit about the biology and, you know, in a way that would be, people would hopefully would understand. For me, it gives me a sense of purpose. You know, you're getting up and you feel as though you're going to do something. You feel as though in yourself, you feel as though it's worthwhile rather than having to drag yourself into something and hating it, you know, and just wanting to pay the mortgage or pay the rent.
So how can people access some of your work?
I've got a domain called georgeandersonresearch.com. Most, you know, articles and things available in there. I do little blogs. Some of the articles are quite heavy going. They're geared towards an academic audience and geared towards trying to improve understanding of the biology and therefore improve the treatment for a whole host of different conditions. But I try to put in a kind of everyday blog along with that that says something, you know, that everybody would understand about what the essence of the article is and the contribution that I'm trying to make.
Last question, and this is the toughest one I'm going to ask you for the whole interview, is what's your favourite biscuit and why?
My favourite biscuit?
And why? And why, though?
Oh, my favourite, I'll be honest, I think my favourite biscuit was always a fig roll.
That's fancy.
Yeah, it's quite fancy, you know, and I just enjoyed, you know, the little juicy figgy bit inside it, you know, like kind of slightly crusty shell and then getting into a wee juicy bit.
So. That's how I describe myself in dating profiles, so I don't get a lot of matches. Thank you for your time, George. We love having you on the show and hopefully see more of your work. And if there's any academic people out there, get him involved. He's a good guy. Peace out.
Thanks for your help. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.